This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to say hi to my cousin Stan McNabb over in Tullahoma. And Stan provides quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle. And I have one of my best buddies on today, Mr. Jimmy Earl, who is looking real sharp today. I guess, do you wear that when you attend the ball games as an official?
No, Truman, I don't have to wear a shirt and tie.
You know, you have the greatest job as an ex-coach and one of the most successful basketball coaches in the history of basketball in this country. Now you get to rate the officials. Now that is a dream job for a retired coach.
That's true, Truman, and you know what I think of that. They didn't listen to me when I was coaching, but they listen to me now.
Oh, I bet they do. And we were talking earlier, and you attended the UT Vanderbilt game.
Yes, I did.
Which was totally one-sided, as we both know. How would you, and you have seen all the teams in this area, in your record of being the winningest coach at MTSU was just broken, and I'm happy for Kermit Davis, and I know you were probably more happy than anybody.
Kermit Davis is a good person and an excellent basketball coach. I have said that when they hired him. He was a good coach the first year he was here. He's a good person. If anybody had to break that record, I'm glad it was Kermit Davis.
And we are so fortunate. We have the men's basketball team, which is, I consider, the best team in the conference, and the ladies' basketball team is the best team in the conference. And we have two of the best coaches in the country. And it's right here, right in the middle of Rutherford County.
No question, you've got two excellent basketball coaches, outstanding coaches. Plus, you've got the fact you've got an excellent AD.
Yes.
So that's good. You put talent with coaching, and you've got a good ball club.
Now, MTSU has grown considerably, as you and I know, over the years. In fact, I think it may be the largest university that's in the state of Tennessee right now. And we go to the games, and we see a lot of community participation at MTSU. But unfortunately, even with the superior teams that we have, it seems like we have a hard time getting the students to come out.
We need more student participation there. The townspeople have supported both ball clubs, the women and the men, but the students need to support more. I guess there's so much to do, and they've got priority on their time, and basketball is not a priority.
You know, I sit over there sometimes and I watch all the people that I know, and I know a large portion of the people that go to the MTSU basketball games. And then I look over there at what should be the student section, and you have the band there. And it's so aggravating for somebody like me who has seen that. Let's go back to the old gym. When you were over at the old gym, that place was packed almost every time we had a basketball game, and a lot of it was student participation.
The students used to support the basketball. They supported all the athletic programs.
Mm-hmm.
But our basketball, when it started getting good, our student participation was just outstanding.
Now, when you came into MTSU, I have forgotten where you came in from when you came in here.
I was at Martin College in Pulaski.
Yeah.
I was there 4 years.
And when you came in, you started building one of the best programs. And how difficult was it to recruit back then? Because you were up against all the big boys around here.
Well, it was difficult to recruit because the first 3 years we were in the old gym and we didn't have Murphy Center to recruit with. Mm-hmm. We had to recruit on a rendering, what a rendering would look like, and we'd show it to the prospect, well, here's where you'll be able to play when you're a senior or a junior. And recruiting was very hard, but once we got in Murphy Center, it was a lot easier.
So there is an attraction to that. They're looking at all the seats in the stands and all the amenities that go with it.
They're looking at places, and they want to play in a big arena, a big venue. And that's just that's a simple fact. And we were recruiting against Western Kentucky and all the Kentucky teams at the time that they were very good.
And you were also recruiting against Vanderbilt and UT and all the SEC teams that were around the Kentucky and all those teams. How difficult was it back when you were the head coach of traveling around trying to find the best basketball players that you were looking for? And was there any particular area that you would like to go into to find that talent?
We would go into – usually we'd go in North Carolina and Georgia. Some in Ohio, not much. Some in Indiana. That's where we got Tim Cisneros and Jimmy Martin from Indiana. Mm-hmm. But it was really, really hard during that time because our program, they heard about Middle Tennessee, and they didn't know where Middle Tennessee was, MTSU. And we would say, well, we're in the league with Western Kentucky. Well, that would ring a bell because they could identify that because Western had a great basketball tradition.
Yeah, I think MTSU, if I remember right, back in the 50s, was primarily a football school.
Yes.
Because, of course, everybody knows of Bubba Murphy, and he built such a dynasty here when he was here.
A great man.
And a lot of the football players would play basketball also back then, which was highly unusual, especially when you're competing against some of the best basketball talent in the United States.
Well, that's true. And, you know, in the conference, we never had a winning record until 1972 or 73.
Which was the best basketball year that you had?
Probably 74 and 75 with Cisneros and Martin and that group and Sorrell. That was an excellent team.
Where did you get Cisneros out of?
Out of Kokomo, Indiana. They called him the Kokomo Cruncher. And he was a person, and I give Ray Rich the credit, when you recruit at a mid-major or a school the size of Middle Tennessee, you've got to look at potential. Mm-hmm. You can't look at that player how he is now. Look at him how he's going to be 2 or 3 years from now. And Cisneros was a self-made basketball player. He came to practice every day. He worked hard, and he developed into an outstanding basketball player.
Don't most of the Indiana boys, don't they have that type of work ethic anyway when you're talking about basketball? Because you talk about when basketball was king, we remember Kentucky and we remember Indiana. That was before the UCLA years.
Well, we had very good success. We had Tim Cisneros and Jimmy Martin, and they were both from Indiana, and they're two excellent basketball players.
Now, of course, you've been observing basketball most of your life, but let's talk about post when you were coaching afterwards. What has changed the most as far as basketball, the way it is now and the way it was when you were coaching?
Well, basketball, as far as the men's game, it's gotten too physical. It's gotten very, very physical. The women's game has some finesse to it. Mm-hmm. The men's game used to have finesse, but it's gotten physical. And then the three-point shot. The three-point shot has changed the game of basketball because no lead is safe anymore. For example, Vanderbilt against Mississippi State, Vanderbilt had an 11-point lead. Mm-hmm. And with 15 minutes and something to go in the second half, they were down 1 point. That's how quickly a lead can change.
One person can really make a difference on a team right now.
Yes.
Could you imagine Jimmy Montgomery playing today with a three-point shot?
Unbelievable. He could shoot the basketball.
I think every team in the country would be after him.
We had a player named Freddie Allen, if you remember, who could shoot the basketball. I've told people if he played during the three-point era, no telling how much he'd scored. But one thing it's done, it's brought shooting back into the game. Shooting was a lost art for a long, long time. It's brought shooting back. And shooting, if someone can shoot the ball, then they can play the game. You ought to find a place for them.
Yeah, you're right. It did. It just became almost one of these things that was invisible. When you would watch a ball game, it was more about athleticism than it was pure basketball talent. And I think that's one of the things I love about girls basketball, because it's still played in a pure like atmosphere like we all grew up with.
You're exactly right. There's more finesse in the women's game than there is in the men's. Coaches were mystified, like you said, with athleticism and running and jumping and dunking, and they forgot you've got to shoot the basketball. You've got to put the ball in the hole, and it's brought shooting back.
Don't you think, though, the changing of the rules on how you officiate had a lot to do with bringing athleticism into basketball? Because to foul back years ago, you didn't need much more than just to touch somebody.
Oh, that's true.
But now you have a mugging underneath the goal almost on every play, and it to me, that the officiating becomes more of a more prevalent in what's going on as far as the end result.
Away from the ball, especially, Truman, there's a lot of contact away from the basketball. And the theory of officiating is that's incidental contact, and it has no difference on the play whatsoever. And so I'll just no-call that. I won't blow my whistle at all. And as I've said, the game it's gotten too physical, really too physical. If you saw the Vanderbilt-Tennessee game the other night, it's as physical a game as I've seen in a good while.
Now, you take somebody like me who is not an expert like you are, and I'm sitting there watching MTSU play basketball, and I see one of our players get knocked down, no foul call. Yet you'll see another one drive on the other side and maybe reach out and touch the arm, and all of a sudden you hear the whistle come out. And it just doesn't seem like the calls are like they should be each time.
Let me say this, though, Truman, in defense of the officials. There is no way you can look at a basketball game objectively and want one team to win. There's no way. Now, if you don't care who wins the game, you can sit down, you can be objective about officiating. You can look at calls and see. But if you have a certain team that you want to win, it's almost impossible to be objective.
But to me, being an official right now in basketball would be one of the toughest jobs. And I know that you have to sit up there and evaluate them. And that has to be hard on you, too, because – I know a lot of times it doesn't seem that you can have two officials out there and they're going to see things different in their own way.
You're right. Well, you've got different angles of the play. One official might have an angle over here. He sees a play differently than this official over here that has a different angle. And there's a lot. But let me also say this. The clock has speeded up the game, and it's made it more exciting for the fans, but it's made it harder to officiate.
With the 30-second clock?
Yes. Yeah, it speed up the game.
Is there any way to take some of the mauling that goes on out of the game and bring it back to more of a pure talent rather than the way it is now? Because sometimes I think I'm watching a football game or hockey or something instead of a basketball game.
I hope that they'll widen the lane. And they've talked about increasing the height of the basket. I don't think that's going to make that much difference, but widening the lane might make a little difference.
Yeah, I can't see making the basket higher.
No.
Because
no, it's not going. But that's two of the things that they've talked about doing. And I'm hoping that they'll widen the lane.
Now, what about the situation as far as being able – where can you go with the foul situation? Because I know you have to let them play up to a certain point, because people enjoy watching the flow of the game. It's never boring. There's always something going on. That's one thing about watching basketball. But you still want to see people out there that have the ability to handle the ball, to be able to shoot, and do all the things that you should be able to do without getting your head knocked off.
Well, it's something. The game is too physical, and they no call a lot. But there's some games, I've seen some poorly played basketball games, and I've seen some poorly officiated basketball games. And anytime you have the human element involved, you're going to have some mistakes made. Mm-hmm. I think the three-man crew has helped officiating. Now, the two-man, the game has become so physical and so fast. Two people can't officiate anymore, and they also hold the officials responsible for the lines. In other words, if a shot is taken out on the perimeter, whether or not it's a two or a three, they mm-hmm. have that trail official is responsible for those lines. That's also why you need that third official.
Well, of course, you have the ability to replay, which has helped quite a bit, not only with the line situation, yeah. but also with the clock situation. We've seen a number of them that have been overturned as you watch the replay. And that has to be, what do you think about instant replay?
I think it's good. I really think it's good. In years past, there'd be some people who were homers on mm-hmm. the clock. And there are several situations I could talk about, but I won't. But now I think they've taken that away from the table and put it on the back of the officials, which is I think is fair, and it's much better. Much better. As far as a coach, I would hate to have someone at the table call a last-second shot. I'd rather the officials call it on the floor. And that happened to me out in Pan American. I won't tell you that story, though.
Oh, come on. I love those stories.
Well, I'll tell that real quick. We're playing Pan American out there, and there's about 13 seconds to go, or 8 seconds. So we get the ball, and we're behind 1 point. So we throw it in, and we get it up there and call timeout, and we take it out on the side. Well, we set a baseline screen for Stan Summerell. He comes around. Mm-hmm. He shoots the ball and misses. We had somebody grab the rebound and go up and score. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the trail official. It was a two-man crew back then, and he canted the basket. Well, we're out on the floor celebrating. Mm-hmm. One of my players taps me on the shoulder. He says, Coach, I won't use the word he used, but we're about to get conned. So I go to the scorer's table. Well, the timer is a Mexican. Mm-hmm. And you know who translated between the timer to the officials? The assistant coach at Pan American, who also spoke Spanish.
Whoa.
And he translated. So about 5 minutes later, instead of us winning, we lost the ball game by 1 point. The goal was no good.
Did you feel like doing a Bobby Knight at that time?
Well, Hank Iba, you remember Hank Iba?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
He came to the dressing room. He's retired. He lived in what they call the Valley. He had a retirement home there in the Valley. He came to the dressing room and knocked on the door, and the managers went out there, and he said, I'd like to see the coach. And so I went out in the hall, and he said, young man, he said, that's what I just saw was a disgrace to the game of basketball. I want to apologize to you.
Wow.
So that's a true story.
Now, you and I remember the first time the Russians beat the United States
yep.
in the Olympics. And there's no doubt about it that was taken away from our team. And it can happen, but it's very rare now. Yeah. And I think that's why I kind of like the instant replay a little bit better than when I first thought. Because, you know, when it first started in football and some of the other things, it seemed like that it was stopping the flow of the game.
It took too much time. You're right.
And sometimes, even in basketball, it seems like it takes forever for them to make the decision.
It does. But the main thing is they get it right.
Yeah.
And it's fair. It's the right call. And I think the replay's good. But I'm like you. It seems like it does take a long time, and it does interrupt the flow of the game.
Do you have to watch a lot of film as you critique how the officials are operating on a day-to-day basis, or do you just kind of, while you're there, observe?
Truman, I've done this since 1982. And what it is, I go to some summer camps and have gone to summer camps, and that's where you teach officials to officiate. They are monitored by veteran officials. They're filmed, they're critiqued, and they live and learn. Where in the past, all they had was one day seminar, and that was it. Officiate the rest of the year. But now they've got young officials coming up that they can monitor and they can see, and they bring them along. So officiating has gotten much better.
Do you still feel like that there's a great rapport between officials and the coaches and the schools like it used to be? Because you and I grew up in a time when it was one big family, and it didn't matter which school you were going to or whatever. Right. You know, we still remember the names of the officials that were calling games back in the 50s and the 60s, and and really with fond memories. It didn't matter where they called one against you. You may have lost game or whatever. You still had that relationship.
It's not like it used to be. Officials and coaches were close back then and had a good relationship. But coaches are paid so much money now, and there's so much pressure on them to keep their job. There's just not that relationship with officials. It's more like war. It's more like enemy type thing. And I remember years ago, the coaches and the officials would get together, and it was more like a family.
You think that, of course, TV has a big influence on games and and on coaches and officials. But it seems like there, not just basketball, but also football, there are times, and even baseball, there are times when the coaches try to get the officials' attention because they feel like that they've lost something, or maybe the other side is getting more calls than they do. Well, do you feel like there's an intimidation factor there at all?
No, I used to think that way, Truman. I used to think, really, when we were in the old gym, and our tradition was not very good. In fact, it was bad. I used to think subconsciously the officials did not think Middle Tennessee was supposed to win. And I've told some of them, I said, now, when you make a call against Western Kentucky in Bowling Green, I'll believe you have some credibility. But no, I don't think they're intimidated. I used to think that, but I don't think they're intimidated now. Officials officiate so much in so many places. Usually your officials will officiate in three or four different leagues. And they're in so many different venues, and they see so many different teams. I don't think they can be intimidated now. I really don't.
Well, what if, say, if they come into MTSU and Kermit's team is playing one of the better teams in the country, and the place is packed. I mean, and it's loud. You can't even talk to your next neighbor, which that's the way I wish it was every game. What if that venue is like that? Does that have an impact on it, on the officials? Because I can't see, he would almost have to have some, because every time one of them make a call, then the place just erupts booing and whatever.
I think it has some effect on the teams. It fires them up, but the officials officiate so much at so many packed venues, many different places. I don't think they're intimidated that much. I really don't.
You know, MTSU fans are very educated fans when it comes to basketball,
yes,
as you know. And it's not unusual to hear the official's name called out in the stands. They know the official's names. They know the opposing coach's names. And you'll hear them holler out and make kind of bad remarks toward them.
Our fans are great.
Yeah.
Our fans are really, really good. And the thing I think I'm the proudest of is they've hollered, and but it's not like the intimidation that you receive up at, say, Murray, up in Moorhead or Eastern. Our fans are just great.
Yeah.
And they treat the visiting team with respect. For example, I think years ago about the coach at Moorhead named Vic, our fans loved him.
Yeah.
And they cheered him. But our fans are intelligent, and they know basketball.
They do, because they know when someone has committed an infraction or whatever. And, in fact, we may have an official calling right now. I'm not too sure who it is, but we're going to have to put our ears on. And, caller, welcome aboard with Coach Jimmy Earle.
Thank you so much. Coach, how are you? I was calling in just to tell you how much we thank you and what a great coach you were and how knowledgeable you are of the game. I've seen a lot of them in action, and I've seen some probably as good, but none better. What I was calling about, when will they adopt, just go on and go with it, just go NBA, go 24-second shot clock, and you have three officials on the floor. If they can't distinguish between a charge and block down there in the three-second lane without having to paint strip that and so on and on, I'd like to see them go, like, with 1 minute in the game like the pros do, just take it out at half court instead of taking it out where the timeout is. What I'm asking, do you think you'll ever see the day that they will adopt the NBA rules? And if they, I think it'd be a good thing, myself, yeah, the way they're going now.
I hope they don't. That's the problem, I think, with college basketball now. We try to be too much like the NBA.
Yeah.
And I hope we could have our own game. And if the NBA does something, they seem to think that's what we ought to do. And I totally disagree. But, you know, who am I? Somebody a lot smarter than me is going to make that decision. But in answer to your question, they might do it. I don't know.
I mean, I can't, you know, like the girls have got a 30-second shot clock and the boys have a 35-second clock. That's never made sense to me, but, I mean, a lot of things they do don't make sense anyway. Just, you know, I don't see a lot of the things they do is really the betterment for the game. Of course, ultimately, possession and all that, sure. I mean, I think that was a good rule and, you know, that type of thing. But I just wanted to get your comment, and it's real good to hear from both of you, and I appreciate it, and good to hear from you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling. That was a good question. Well, we're going to take a quick break right now and tell you that this portion of the show is brought to you by Golden Coin Connection, and they're at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside the Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And they have a second store now. It's at 5631 New Nashville Highway, 5631 New Nashville Highway, next to the TriStar Motors. And Larry Dunn, who is from ERO Ministry, and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly, buy gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. I bet they even probably got a picture of you, Jimmy, over there talking about. I'm not talking about great antiques. I'm trying to. So. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today. And that's at the Golden Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street and 5631 New Nashville Highway. Or give them a call at 890-2646.
Be a hero for kids with cancer. Join Bald in the Borough's second annual St. Baldrick's event on March 16th at 4 p.m. located in Lanes, Trains, and Automobiles in Murfreesboro. You can be a part of the excitement, whether you shave your head, volunteer, or donate. You'll be giving hope to those kids fighting childhood cancers. Go to baldintheborough.com and see how you can be a hero too. Sponsored by Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hot Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
In today's tough economy, there is one real estate team that stands out from the rest. Ann Hoken Associates has built a reputation of success throughout Rutherford County. Ann's professional staging and exceptional service will combine to help sell your home in a timely manner. When it's your time to buy or sell, just ask Ann.
This is Ann Hoke of Keller Williams Realty. I would love to personally talk with you. Call me today at 397-4024. Sell faster and buy smarter with Ann Hoke and Associates.
Looking now at Good Neighbor Events from WGNS, the Greenhouse Ministries is offering free tax preparation for anyone whose total household income is $50,000 or less per year. They have volunteers there to help you fill out those tax forms. That'll be now through tax day at the Greenhouse Ministries over on Spring Street. And the Hot Metal Show continues in the gallery at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro now through February the 2nd. It's a combination of weathered assemblages and sculpture. The gallery at the Center for the Arts is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 in the morning until 5 in the evening. Be sure to check with our local Red Cross about classes on CPR for both adults and infants. They're also offering babysitters training. The Red Cross here in town is at 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce location. Check with them about these classes. And Pat Whitaker is again offering the Tai Chi classes over at the Lane Agri-Park. They're on Wednesday mornings from 9 until 10, and the next 8-week session begins February the 1st. For information or to sign up, get with Pat Whitaker at the Lane Agri-Park, 898-7710. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
Play it again, sports!
25 to 50% off. A new shipment of scratch and dent fitness equipment is in at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane. Exercise bikes, ellipticals, treadmills, and more. 25 to 50% off. Save now before the deals are gone.
Before the cold winter wind blows, be sure to take care of your car. Bring it by and let us check the battery and coolant. We'll do a complete car check, look at tires, wipers, and more to make sure it's safe for the road. That's Todd's Complete Auto Care. We're on Southeast Broad Street, 962-9050.
It's the Truman Show. A look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back. And we'll let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And you can reach them at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And what they do is they come into your home when you're no longer able to take care of the normal duties that you have to have at the house. And they come in, do all of that for you 24/7, 7 days a week. And they also run errands for you, and they make sure that you're comfortable and able to still stay at home and enjoy the life the way you were supposed to. And Jimmy, back to the question that was asked you earlier about the NBA and going to the type of basketball that they have. I am one of these people that never really has enjoyed the NBA. For the simple reason that I grew up in a time when we saw basketball played a little bit different than what they play. And it seems like it would be very difficult to be in your position to grade officials at the NBA because they have to dance to a different drum. Because you see their great athletes out there, their star athletes, they're given different treatment than some of the others, and you wonder how in the world a call has been called or why wasn't one called on a situation.
You're exactly right. The NBA is a different animal, and officiating is a lot different, and they give leeway to say someone like Michael Jordan or someone like that. But, you know, that's not saying there's anything bad about the officials. There's some outstanding officials, but NBA is a different venue. It's a different league.
Have they influenced basketball the way it is now, as you see it in college and in some respects even in high school? I mean, you're starting to see a little bit of that starting to grow.
Well, that's true, and it seems like everything that we do is copied after the NBA. If the NBA is doing something, then we need to do something, and especially in officiating. But again, I don't know what the future holds, but I hope we have our own game and maintain our own game and have some individuality about ourselves rather than copy the NBA.
You know, we see a lot of the influence of the NFL on college football. We really do, because the great athletes, they want to go on to a career where all the money is, of course, and all the glory.
Well, that's true. And I tell you, the thing that upsets me the most, Truman, is a young man that sees an NBA game or an NFL game on TV, he thinks if he plays athletics, he's got to have some tattoos. And some of them have tattoos all over their arm, and it's not good. The effect of the NBA is not totally good.
You know, our heroes when we were kids were baseball players or football players or basketball players. And we mimicked them, how they would act, all those type things. And I still think back, it seems like maybe they did not get the bad notoriety that they do now. But no. But it's so, I mean, it's stuffed right in your face. And it's so hard for a kid to pick out a role model now with what they're looking at.
That's very true. You think of, when we grow up, or when I grew up, I think of Stan Musial, the great player for mm-hmm. the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
I think of Ted Williams. I think of Willie Mays. I think of Bill Russell, the great center for the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. And like you're talking about, we're looking for role models. And I guess that's why I pull so hard for Tim Tebow. Mm-hmm. Because if there ever was a role model, he certainly is. And Peyton Manning was a role model. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the influence that they have. It seemed like everybody is just kind of wandering around, and all of a sudden they see somebody like Tebow coming along that they really want him to be successful because of what he's all about.
Exactly.
And he's just a. I mean, if you want your kids to watch a football game, you want them to watch Tim Tebow before and after the game.
That's exactly. It's what he does off the field. I don't think Tim Tebow is a great quarterback, especially in the pros, mm-hmm. but what he does off the field attracts him to everyone.
Now, you were mentioning Bill Russell, who played with the Boston Celtics, and we go back to a different time again. I mean, it was a physical game, but it wasn't to the point of where it is now, and I still remember some of those great games that Bill Russell had against Wilt the Steel Chamberlain.
Yep.
And you talking about
great
pure
matchup.
Basketball. Now, if basketball was like that in the NBA right now, I would love to watch it.
I'd love to see the Boston Celtics play with Bob Cousy and Bill Russell and Tom Heinsohn
mm-hmm.
and that group. They're great teams. Great teams.
Well, Boston really, they've always supported their teams, but it's always been a class outfit. Of course, you read Auerbach.
Auerbach
was one of the great coaches, I guess, of all times. But it seems like that it's all, and you mentioned it earlier, it's all about entertainment and show. It seems like it, basketball and characters seem to take maybe a second step back.
Well, we are paying the pro athletes so much money. It changes some of them's lifestyle, and not for the good.
Yeah, what if you were playing right now basketball the way you did years ago? It would be hard to, you see that dangling in front of you, and it would be hard to say, no, I'm not going to do it. But
well, I don't.
It seems like it changes people.
It does. I don't blame some of these young students going pro. Because if they're brought up, say, in the ghetto,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody dangle that money out there, I don't blame them.
No, it gives them a new chance for life. I mean, it really does.
But many times, like you say, it changes their lifestyle.
Yeah, and in some respects, I know some of the teams actually do have programs where they try to teach the kids, you know, which direction to go, how to use their money, and how to stay more stable than getting caught up in it.
And what is so sad, with all the money that they make during their playing days, they end up broke. Some of them do. They don't know how to handle the money.
Do you miss coaching?
I miss the relationship with the players and the practices and the teaching part of it. I certainly do. I don't miss the recruiting and some of the other things that go with it.
I know that you always had a good relationship with your players. Is that something that has carried on for all these years? Because I know that they probably still call you coach.
Yeah. I had Greg Joyner about 2 weeks ago. He called me from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that. Most of our kids, most of our players graduated, and that's the thing I'm the proudest of, is most of them got their degree.
And that's one of the most important things.
That's what it's all about. That's what college basketball is all about.
Where did Cicinarius, so where is he in?
He's in Kokomo, Indiana. He's retired.
Oh, he's still
there. He had a union job. He was a supervisor or something with the union,
mm-hmm.
and he's retired. But I hardly ever hear from Tim. Nobody hears from Tim
much. I'm surprised about that. But you guys are pretty close.
Yeah, but I hear from Bob Martin. Mm-hmm. I hear from Jimmy Martin. I hear from Greg Joyner. I think that's one of the things that I enjoy is the relationship over the years with the players.
Do you feel like Kermit is in a position now? Of course, he's got a great team this year. I mean, they're going to be solid, and I really believe they're going to end up and go into the tournament and win some games.
I believe they are. They can play with anybody. They've got a good ball club.
Do you think he's building right now for the future, for where MTSU is going to continue to go? You take like Rick Ensel. He has done a remarkable job over there with the Lady Raiders.
And he may have done his best coaching job this year.
Oh, it's been unbelievable. It's been a joy to watch them, how they've improved, and to watch him as he works out on the court.
He's an excellent basketball coach, has a great work ethic, and that's why he won 10 state championships at Shevville.
Yeah.
While everybody else was taking vacations and stuff, he was coaching AAU in the summer. He worked at it 12 months a year.
And most people think that coaching is not an 8 or 10 hour day job.
No, it's not. The only thing I regret about coaching, Truman, is my children grew up from under me. I didn't get to spend the time with them that I should have spent with them. I was on the road recruiting and doing other things, and they grew out from under me.
But that's part of the coaching.
Yep.
I mean, it involves your whole life, your whole existence, because you've got another family that you're having to take care
that's
of.
That's exactly right.
And I can't imagine sitting there hours upon hours talking to the kids, going through the films, looking at the other teams, and all the things it takes to become successful. Because if you see a successful coach out there somewhere, that guy is working his rear end
off. That's exactly right.
And it's emotionally draining, too, because every win is a big high, and every loss is you're in the dumps. You're riding a roller coaster.
And Johnny Odom, you remember Johnny Odom,
yes,
coached at Tennessee Tech,
yes,
and Western Kentucky, great coach.
Mm-hmm.
He told me one year before we got pretty good, he said, it's easier to win than it is to maintain a program. I thought he was lying. I didn't think that. I said, I disagree. But he's right.
Hmm.
The tough thing when you're on top is to maintain it and stay competitive and on top.
Because the fans expect you to stay
there.
That's
exactly right.
You set the bar up high for
yourself,
and they expect you to
be there.
That's
right. That's exactly right.
Was recruiting ever a problem for you once you got into the winning stage?
It got easier. But the thing I didn't like about recruiting is you had to be such a hypocrite. When you recruited a player, you need to tell him how good he was and all this and that. And then after he enrolled in your school and you started practicing, you tell him how far he has to go to improve to be better.
Hmm.
And he's not good at this or he's not good at that.
Did you ever run into problems when you were recruiting a good ball player and have family members get involved? Because I have seen that happen a number of
times.
That's
happened a lot.
And that has got to be a terrible situation for the coach.
I can't think of a situation, although I will give you a positive situation.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Chris Harris, mm-hmm, a four-year start at school out here, and he coached at Siegel, had excellent teams.
Mm-hmm.
I recruited him, and I went in to see his mother and father in the front room, in the living room. And his father looked over at me and says, Coach, if this young man ever causes you any problems, all you have to do is pick the phone up and call me. He won't cause you any more problems.
Wow.
And I've never had a parent say that, and I'll never forget that.
Now, I know as many basketball teams that there are in the country, you have to have kind of like scouts out there paving the way for you somehow, because you cannot – in no way and fashion find all the talent that's out there.
No. Usually, if there's a coach in a certain area you know, then you will go there, and that coach will tell you, well, so-and-so has got a power forward, or so-and-so's got a point guard, and it's usually word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's recruiting services you can sign up for and subscribe to and take that'll tell you where the players are, but usually it's word of mouth, and you'll go from school to school.
So you develop friendships.
Yep, over the years.
And that is part of, I guess, the success should get better as you're in there longer, and you develop more of the contacts that you have.
And like I said, when you start to win and your program starts to rise, the word gets out. And it makes recruiting much easier because players want to go to school and they want to go to a winning program and get a good education.
Now, the NCAA has a lot of rules on coaches, whether it's basketball, football, or whatever. And I guess the one is foremost in my mind right now, of course, was the Bruce Pearl incident that just happened. How in the world do coaches, how do they make it through that mountain load of rules that are there? And I know that you have to have classes and know what's updating.
Well, the NCAA rule book, if you've ever seen NCAA, it's thick. The catalog is thick. And each school now has a compliance department. Mm-hmm. And the compliance department meets with each coach and goes over the rules with them. And it makes it a lot easier.
Does the pressure make you have bad decisions? Just like Bruce Pearl, he had a lot of pressure on him to win. Of course, you know, he was always in front of the camera, and he was go and those types. He was a winner. But when you have that much pressure on you, and then you have what I would consider a small incident of breaking the rules initially. But then he tried to cover it up, which made it a whole lot worse than what it really should have been.
You're right, Truman. The cover-up was worse. The first rule was just a secondary violation, which there wouldn't hardly been any penalty. There's been a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. But trying to cover it up and then calling the parents and telling the parents to lie about it, mm-hmm. if that's what he did, that's what did it.
Do you think the relationship with coach and prospective players, is that something that you feel like the rules are good, or they're in place because they have to be, or are they just kind of nitpicking type rules? Because some of them I hear as far as recruiting and getting to see the
kids. Well, some of them are good and some of them are bad. For example, when Kentucky had the athletic dormitory, and it was like a Taj Mahal, and South Carolina had one like a Taj Mahal. Well, that gave them an unfair recruiting advantage over schools that didn't have those facilities. Mm-hmm. They could bring a recruit on the campus, and they would have them because they'd show them the facilities. And I think that rule is good, but some of the other one is kind of nitpicking.
One I was thinking about was when one of the good girls basketball players was over visiting the ESPN. Of course, you got Connecticut girls are there.
Yeah.
And it was almost seemed, I think that's one of the things that got Pat and the coach there crossways, because I think they may have been, supposedly they thought they were using that as a leverage for one of their better ball players.
That's the same story I heard.
We're going to take a quick break and let you know that this portion is brought to you by Pearlin Howerton Automotive. Mark Pearlin, John Howerton. Of course, Mark lives right here in Murfreesboro. And their business is at 2006 North Main Street in Shebbeville. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, give them a call at 1-800-264-6800. Toll free, of course. Or pull them up on the internet, PearlHowerton.com. Or better, take about a 25-minute drive down 231 South. It's on your left just before you get into downtown Shevel. Go in and see the nice people and have yourself a great afternoon.
Hello, my name is Lance Jenkins, candidate for property assessor. As your next property assessor, I will ensure that every property owner is treated fair and equally. I have over 17 years experience in the property assessor's office, serving from 1987 to 2004 as deputy assessor under former assessor Tommy Sanford. I would appreciate your vote for property assessor. Early voting, February 15th through February 28th. I am Lance Jenkins, and I approve this message, Lynn E. Jenkins, treasurer. Vote Lance Jenkins, property assessor.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative, skilled nursing, and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Health Care, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
If you love college basketball, there's nothing like the madness of March. If you're a fan of the Sun Belt Conference, the place to be March 3rd through the 6th is Hot Springs, Arkansas. For the 2012 Conference Basketball Tournament, ticket packages for the entire tournament are available for $128 at your local Sun Belt Schools ticket office. Don't miss out on 4 days of fun in Hot Springs, Arkansas, America's first resort. The Sun Belt's top teams will battle it out for a trip to the dance. With new rivalries being made, championships being crowned, and dreams coming true. Get your Sun Belt Conference Tournament tickets today.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Coach Jimmy Earle. And one thing we were talking about off the air was all the rules that the NCAA has to enforce. And, of course, we're talking about a large number of teams that are going on. So they do not have the manpower to actually enforce it and be there themselves. So they have to rely on people to relate to them certain incidences that have happened. And that's kind of a problem there in itself.
It's usually a disgruntled parent or a player who's not playing, who's upset about his playing time. That usually causes the problems. But the coaches, I feel sorry for the coaches because the NCAA has got hot periods that you can recruit, cold periods where you can't recruit. And it takes the compliance department to keep them abreast of what's going on with the NCAA rules, what they can do and what they can't do, and when they can practice and when they can't practice. They've got so many hours a week they can practice.
That's almost overwhelming. It really is. I mean, you can look at the things that are in the best interest of the school, the best interest of the kid, but some of these things, you can over-enact rules that can almost stifle you. I mean, we see that in government and everything else these days, but when you put it into sports, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, I feel sorry for the coaches today because they've got so many guidelines to follow, and they've got the compliance department, and there's so much paperwork involved, and it's a long process.
Well, what about the poor officials now? I mean, I know that you're part of the governing body that watches over them. If some young fellas out there right now wanting to be a basketball official, what would you tell them?
What we look for, Truman, is athleticism. We want somebody who can run the floor and put himself in the position to make the call. Mm-hmm. And they've got to go to summer camps, and it's kind of like being discovered as a movie star. Supervisors will see you in that camp, and they'll put you in a league, and they'll let you work in that league, and they'll monitor your progress, and then they'll bring you on up if you've got the talent to do that. But my advice to a young official is to get involved as much as you can and study the game and officiate intramural games, officiate the church league games, officiate junior pro games, officiate high school games, junior high, anything to get started. And then once you get started and you get in the league, that's fine.
Now, if you're fortunate enough to be officiating in at the high school level, do you have people that are actually watching these officials, or do they have to call attention to you first?
For example, I'll tell you, Gary Maxwell, who officiated in the ACC, you've heard of Gary Maxwell, mm-hmm. He's an SEC official. Years ago, John Guthrie, he was officiating high school, and he was officiating out at Oakland. Oakland was playing Cookeville. Well, he's got an insurance agency in Cookeville. And I went to the game. He said, I want you to look at this young official. Well, he called a technical foul on the Cookeville coach right in front of his bench. And I told John, I said, he's got guts running out his ears. And I said, he's going to be a good official in time. He just needs to see more plays. And he went through some camps, and the rest is history. He's done well.
Now, how long is a camp? Say if they're going to for an official.
They will go, let's say, on a Monday, and they'll be through on Friday. They'll last about a week or 5 days.
What do they go over? The positioning on the court?
The positioning, and then what they do is they film them or videotape them on the floor. And they'll be a veteran official who critique them. And then after they get through officiating, they'll go into a room with that veteran official, and he'll tell them what they did wrong, what they should do, and what they shouldn't do, which is good. That's a good way to learn.
Now, if you're grading an official and you see that he has a number of errors in his officiating, at what point do you call his attention to some of the things that he has done wrong?
Well, usually I'll send in a report. Now, some officials I've seen officiate very good, and then they'll have a bad game. And I'll usually send it into my report, and that's the supervisor's job to determine whether or not he wants to promote him in the league or he wants to cut him.
Does it make any difference if, say, if an official makes a bad call at a highly televised game, say it's MTSU and Vanderbilt playing or somebody like that, and it's on regional television, and he really blows it? Does that put any more pressure on that official?
I think it probably puts a lot of pressure on that official. For example, at Western Kentucky the other night, I forget who they were playing, but they had six players on the floor when they got beat. And there's no excuse for that. None whatsoever. With a three-man crew, there's no excuse.
Yeah, I mean, I heard them talk about that the other day on one of the sports shows, and it really doesn't make any difference. I wonder what kind of reasoning the official had for missing that one.
He was just asleep. He didn't pay attention. You've got three officials on the floor, and there is just simply no excuse.
Well, I guarantee there's nobody out there asleep right now listening to you, Jimmy. I always appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship.
Thank you,
I appreciate
Freeman.
What you've done for the university and what you've done for this area.
It's always a pleasure to be with you.
And I guarantee you, I've got to have you back on again because it's a joy for me to have somebody like you on here.
Well, I enjoy it, Truman. I enjoy coming up and seeing you.
And we do want to say congratulations to Coach Kermit Davis.
Yes.
For having such
Definitely.
A great year.
He's got a great ball team.
And Rick Ensel. And there is a game tonight at 7 p.m. at MTSU girls basketball.
And I'll be there.
And I'll be there too. And we'll see everybody out there that's listening. You all be there also. And we'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.